Welcome back to the SCJ Radio, 1460 AM, 94.9 FM, Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Kalskis, and this is Having Read That, conversations with authors about their books.
And I'm joined by Mitch Harris, and he is out with a brand new book. This is called My Private War, Relentlessly Chasing a Dream from the Navy to the Major Leagues. It's available everywhere, especially at MitchHarris.com. And Mitch graduated from the Naval Academy, played for the St. Louis Cardinals, and in between, there was a story there. Now, Mitch, you hear somebody that went to the Naval Academy, you hear somebody that pitched in the Major Leagues. I would think either one of those would be enough to write a memoir about. You've done both in your life, and lots of things in between. And so when you sat down to write this memoir, putting your life story together up to this point, how did you go ahead to get that structure put together to create a cohesive book for us to read and learn from?
It was a process, that's for sure. It's funny, when I was playing, Mike Matheny, our manager at the time, he always said, you gotta write this stuff down. And at first I was like, what are you talking about, he kind of just talked to me about how your story's different. This is, no one's done this before. Make sure you're writing this down, not only for yourself, but potentially write a book someday. And here we are, almost, over 10 years later. And, for me, it was really about, especially in today's world, everybody has their social media story or their Google story, as I like to say it. And I wanted to tell the full story. Everyone knows the story from, going to the Naval Academy to the big leagues, but they don't know the real story, the true story. And I wanted to share that with everybody because I feel like it's impactful to be vulnerable, to share with people that sometimes the dreams and journeys that we have are not always easy. And so for me, I really wanted to write the full story out so that people can see that, even people that achieve some of the toughest things, man, they have to go through some dark days sometimes. And hopefully that inspires people to achieve things that they're wanting to achieve.
You were essentially a kid with two dreams in general, serving your country in the Navy, being a commissioned officer, and also playing in the major leagues. It had to go in this sequence, though, because it's not like you could go to the Naval Academy in your late 20s, but you still could potentially play baseball in your late 20s. So did you feel yourself being pulled in two different ways, or was it just one general feeling of being pulled toward your ultimate dream?
Oh, absolutely. I think... What was interesting was, when I was coming out of high school, I didn't really understand what the Naval Academy was. I went to a small high school in North Carolina, and I had heard of it, but I didn't really understand what it truly meant to go to the Naval Academy. But once I got there and really got a foundation for what it meant to serve and to have a commitment, it really meant a lot to me, and I wanted to do both. And so as I got into pro ball, and I had this, as I got towards my back end of my career in the Navy, I really wanted to figure out how to do both in pro ball. And we just could not figure that out because obviously at the time, we were in the middle of a war and the Navy had put on hold, any early release policy, which is, at the time you were allowed to do 2 years of active duty and then extend your reserve time. And they just put that on hold and basically said, we'll kind of look at it case by case. And so that was tough because, I didn't want people to think I was trying to get out of a commitment. I wanted to serve. I wanted to fulfill my commitment to the academy and my family and my country. But I also wanted to fulfill a dream that I had as a young kid. And I think that's a tough kind of place to be because I was definitely getting pulled in two directions, and I just had to make the best of it. I wanted to be the best officer, make an impact on my guys' lives, but I also wanted to continue to fight to achieve the dream I had for the last, at the time, 20 plus years. It was definitely a tough tug of war there.
The idea of somebody getting into pro ball and not on a consistent trajectory when you take the time off, you're not throwing a baseball, you're not practicing, you're not playing in organized ball. Did you feel that clock ticking? I mean, women talk about biological clocks. Did you feel your baseball clock ticking as you're working into your, early 20s and then later 20s? And, this there's a small window to deal with
here.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah, it was, For sure. Understatement, I think. I think it was one of those where, I mean, every day it felt like, man, that's one more day that I've lost, potentially in my prime, you know. I didn't get out of the Navy until I was 27. Showed up to spring training there in Jupiter, and you know, my first season I was older than Ollie Marmol, and I was 27, he was 26 in short season, and so it was definitely one of those things where I'm like, man, I've got an uphill battle because I've lost, you know, some of the best years from a physical standpoint, and so now it's just, and I think it just added fuel to the fire. I wanted to prove that I could still do it. But every day, every passing day out there throwing the flight deck was just a reminder that man, you gotta work even harder to be able to do this.
When I think of a 27-year-old getting down there, you're a year older than your manager in short season, and you've got a lot of guys that are still late teens, early 20s there. How do you, as a 27-year-old, even relate to them when you're sitting in the dugout? It's almost a generation gap. How did that work?
It did. Carson Kelly was our first-round draft pick that year, and he was the catcher. He was our third baseman. You know, he was, I think, 18, maybe. And so there's definitely that generational gap because it was an interesting clubhouse, but it was also fun because, you know, they treated me like the old man, you know, the big brother. I embraced that. I really enjoyed, you know, getting to talk to these guys and give them, you know, life advice and talk off-the-field stuff, whereas, you know, they had more experience on the field. Even at the young age, because I'd missed so many years. So it was a really fun year. We had an absolute blast. We had a great clubhouse. To say that it was a little interesting would be, again, an understatement.
I'm chatting with Mitch Harris about his new book, My Private War, Relentlessly Chasing a Dream from the Navy to the Major Leagues. It's available everywhere. Mitch became a relief pitcher for the St. Louis Cardinals in the Major League Baseball. And, Mitch, I remember the quote from years ago. Kennesaw Mountain Landis, the first commissioner of baseball, said, "Every child builds a shrine to a baseball hero, and before that shrine, a flame always burns." For me, it was Ryne Sandberg growing up in the 80s. Who was it for you?
Don Smoltz. You know, as a kid, you know, I used to, and I wrote about it in the book, we had a wall, a retaining wall, along my driveway in Georgia where I grew up, and I would tape up a square on that wall, and that was my strike zone. I would walk through the previous night's game of the starting pitcher and the lineup, and I just, you know, dreamed of being on the mound and striking guys out. And at the time, obviously, Smoltz was the ace, and so I always dreamed of being able to pitch like him, and even, you know, as I got older, you know, I would wear his number, you know, depending on what was available. But for sure, when I was a kid, that was who I looked up to, not only how he carried himself, but how he performed as well.
Something else I took away from your book: both careers, Navy and Major League Baseball, they're very tough on relationships. Navy, it's hard to communicate with people. You're on a ship, you're away. Baseball is the same thing. You're traveling, you're away. How did you deal with that, or was there anything that you could really do about it? Did you get prepared for that? How did that work in your life?
No, I think that's one of the sacrifices that you know, kind of know and have to just accept. You know, you have email, obviously, you know, but definitely no phones, especially back then. You did have a satellite phone just in case. There was an emergency of some sort where someone needed to call home, but it was tough. The communication with anybody back home was difficult because, you know, everything had to go through email and it's very difficult to hear someone's voice through email so communication was difficult. But again, I think that's something that we all knew that we was going to be a situation that we couldn't do anything about. And again, I think it's just another small sacrifice that you make and kind of have to accept when you go off and serve.
You're a appearance in the major leagues brought about the trivia about Nemo Gaines, the first Naval Academy graduate to play in the major leagues. It was almost 100 years before you did, but when those types of things were going on, did you feel like, you said that you felt a little bit like Roy Hobbs, I think, but when your appearance is also, it seems like you're invariably linked now with Nemo Gaines. What is that like as a young man?
I mean, it's an honor. I mean, to bring up names like that from the 1920s is an honor. I mean to accomplish what he did, he was the first to do it. I mean, the first to kind of break that barrier of going from the Naval Academy to Major League Baseball with the Washington Senators way back when. And so, you know, to be honest, I didn't even know about him until I got to the big leagues and someone brought it up and talked to me about it, and then I obviously did a lot of research on it, which was really cool. But man, I'm honored to be even, you know, in the same sentence with guys like that who've done some, you know, really, really awesome, great things. And so I think that just makes it more special to me. Is I tell people all the time, they're like, man, what a cool story. And a lot of times I forget because it's just my story. But when I kind of step back and take a look at the things that, you know, that I've done and that, you know, are associated with others, it's really an honor to have my name even in that sentence with those guys.
Sometimes I think we get tunnel vision watching major league games and we see guys get called up from the AAA or the AA or wherever they get called up from, have to get called up from. And in the book, I kind of chuckled when I read it because you talked about the life event that actually got you called up. It was somebody else's wife having a baby, right?
Right.
That,
it was, yeah. So Peter Borges and his wife had a baby, and therefore opened up a spot. And at the time, they needed another arm in the bullpen, so I got called up. And you know, typically when someone takes leave for having a baby, it's usually around 3 days. It's kind of the known thing. And so I knew going up, like, okay, well, I've got 3 days. Let's make the best of it and see what happens. And fortunately, when Peter Borges came back in the locker room, you know, of course I was sweating. And then when my name did not get called to see the manager, I was obviously super excited. But yeah, it was a day I'll never forget. To this day, I'm very thankful that Peter Borges and his wife had that baby.
when you make a major league debut or when you pitch in any major league game, is anything that can prepare you for walking out on that? I mean, the fields are all the same size as a minor league field, as a little league, you know, the high school field. But is there anything that can prepare you for that moment to get out there in front of the crowds and the cameras?
So no. The short answer is no. However, with that being said, you know, we've played this game since we were, you know, 5 years old. And, you know, what's crazy is in that moment, again, I've told this story, you know, 100 times. But when they opened up that wall, you know, in right field in Milwaukee and I started running out, you know, there was every bit of, you know, 30,000-40,000 fans in the stadium. I don't think I saw any of them because you just kind of go back to, you have all this nervous energy, you have all this excitement, you have all this adrenaline. But then the muscle memory, the work ethic, everything you've done from the time you began playing that game just kind of comes into full effect. And when you run out there and you get on the mound, you realize, man, I've been doing this forever. I've been working my entire life for this moment. Now I've just got to let my skills, my work ethic, everything that I've put into this, I've got to just make sure I focus and get executing and getting the job done. And you talk about tunnel vision, man. I looked 60 feet 6 inches away, and there was the catcher, and that's about all I saw was his mitt, and I just thought, okay, strike one. Let's get strike one and go from there. But man, there's no feeling that you can describe that you feel when you come in and you get on the mound for the St. Louis Cardinals, having that birds on the bat. That's a feeling that I will forever remember.
All right. Well, it's just a great story, amazing amount of highs and lows in this career trajectory you had. The book is My Private War, Relentlessly Chasing a Dream from the Navy to the Major Leagues. It's by Mitch Harris. The book's available everywhere. Go to MitchHarris.com especially. You can get a copy there as well. Mitch, a fantastic story. I took so much from it, and I thank you for joining me to talk about it.
Brian, I appreciate you having me. Great talking to you.
This has been Having Read That on KSCJ Radio. I'm Brian Vakulskas. Check out all of our episodes on our website, kscj.com, and subscribe to our iTunes podcasts. Thanks to music historian Molly Jolly and segment producer John Weisler. We will be back next time.